Chapter 3. Prax. Praxiteke Mung stood in the doorway of the staging barn, looking out at the fields of softly waving leaves so utterly green they were almost black, and panicked. The dome arched above him, darker than it should have been. Power to the grow lights had been cut, and the mirrors. He couldn't think about the mirrors. The flickers of fighting ships looked like glitches on a cheap screen, colors and movements that shouldn't have been there. The sign that something was very wrong. He licked his lips. There had to be a way. There had to be some way to save them. "Prax," Doris said, "we have to go, now." The cutting edge of low-resource agricultural botany, the glycine quinan, a type of soybean so heavily modified it was an entirely new species, represented the last 8 years of his life. They were the reason his parents still hadn't seen their only granddaughter in the flesh. They, and a few other things, had ended his marriage. He could see the 8 subtly different strains of engineered chloroplasts in the fields, each one trying to spin out the most protein per photon. His hands were trembling. He was going to vomit. "We have maybe 5 more minutes to impact," Doris said. "We have to evacuate." "I don't see it," Prax said. "It's coming fast enough. By the time you see it, you won't see it. Everyone else is already gone. We're the last ones. Now get in the lift." The great orbital mirrors had always been his allies, shining down on his fields like 100 pale suns. He couldn't believe that they'd betray him. It was an insane thought. The mirror plummeting toward the surface of Ganymede, toward his greenhouse, his soybeans, his life's work, hadn't chosen anything. It was a victim of cause and effect, the same as everything else. "I'm about to leave," Doris said. "If you're here in 4 minutes, you'll die." "Wait," Prax said. He ran out into the dome. At the edge of the nearest field, he fell to his knees and dug into the rich black soil. The smell of it was like a good patchouli. He pushed his fingers in as deep as he could, cupping a root ball. The small, fragile plant came up in his hands. Doris was in the industrial lift, ready to descend into the caves and tunnels of the station. Prax sprinted for her. With the plant to save, the dome suddenly felt horribly dangerous. He threw himself through the door and Doris pressed the control display. The wide metal room of the lift lurched, shifted, and began its descent. Normally it would have carried heavy equipment, the tiller, the tractor, the tons of humus taken from the station recycling processors. Now it was only the 3 of them. Prax sitting cross-legged on the floor, the soybean seedling nodding in his lap, Doris chewing her lower lip and watching her hand terminal. The lift felt too big. "The mirror could miss," Prax said. "It could, but it's 1,300 tons of glass and metal. The shockwave will be fairly large." "The dome might hold." "No," she said, and Prax stopped talking to her. The cart hummed and clanked, falling deeper under the surface ice, sliding into the network of tunnels that made up the bulk of the station. The air smelled like heating elements and industrial lubricant. Even now, he couldn't believe they'd done it. He couldn't believe the military bastards had actually started shooting each other. No one anywhere could really be that short-sighted, except that it seemed they could. In the months since the Earth-Mars alliance had shattered, he'd gone from constant and gnawing fear to cautious hope to complacency. Every day that the United Nations and the Martians hadn't started something had been another bit of evidence that they wouldn't. He'd let himself think that everything was more stable than it looked. Even if things got bad and there was a shooting war, it wouldn't be here. Ganymede was where the food came from. With its magnetosphere, it was the safest place for pregnant women to gestate. claiming the lowest incidence of birth defects and stillbirth in the outer planets. It was the center of everything that made human expansion into the solar system possible. Their work was as precious as it was fragile, and the people in charge would never let the war come here. Doris said something obscene. Prax looked up at her. She ran a hand through her thin, white hair, turned, and spat. "Lost connectivity," she said, holding up the hand terminal. "Whole network's locked down." "By who?" "Station security? United Nations? Mars? How would I know?" "But if they..." The concussion was like a giant fist coming down on the cart's roof. The emergency brakes kicked in with a bone-shaking clang. The lights went out, darkness swallowing them for two hummingbird-fast heartbeats. Four battery-powered emergency LEDs popped on, then off again, as the cart's power came back. The critical failure diagnostic started to run. Motors humming, lifts clicking, the tracking interface spooling through checksums like an athlete stretching before a run. Prax stood up and walked to the control panel. The shaft sensors reported minimal atmospheric pressure and falling. He felt a shudder as containment doors closed somewhere above them and the exterior pressure started to rise. The air in the shaft had been blown out into space before the emergency systems could lock down. His dome was compromised. His dome was gone. He put his hand to his mouth, not realizing he was smearing soil across his chin until he'd already done it. Part of his mind was skittering over the things that needed to be done to save the project. Contact his project manager at RMD Southern, refile the supplemental grant applications, get the data backups to rebuild the viral insertion samples, while another part had gone still and eerily calm. The sense of being two men, one bent on desperate measures, the other already in the numb of mourning, felt like the last weeks of his marriage. Doris turned to him, a weary amusement plucking at her wide lips. She put out her hand. "It was a pleasure working with you, Dr. Meng." The cart shuddered as the emergency brakes retracted. Another impact came from much farther off. A mirror or a ship falling. Soldiers shelling each other on the surface. Maybe even fighting deeper in the station. There was no way to know. He shook her hand. "Dr. Bourne," he said, "it has been an honor." They took a long, silent moment at the graveside of their previous lives. Doris sighed. "All right," she said, "let's get the hell out of here." May's daycare was deep in the body of the moon, but the tube station was only a few hundred yards from the cart's loading dock, and the express trip down to her was no more than 10 minutes, or would have been if they were running. In 3 decades of living on Ganymede, Prax had never even noticed that the tube stations had security doors. The 4 soldiers standing in front of the closed station wore thick-plated armor, painted in shifting camouflage lines the same shades of beige and steel as the corridor. They carried intimidatingly large assault rifles and scowled at the crowd of a dozen or more pressing in around them. "I am on the transportation board," a tall, thin, dark-skinned woman was saying, punctuating each word by tapping her finger on one soldier's chest plate. "If you don't let us past, then you're in trouble. Serious trouble." "How long is it going to be down?" a man asked. "I need to get home. How long is it going to be down?" "Ladies and gentlemen," the soldier on the left shouted. She had a powerful voice. It cut through the rumble and murmur of the crowd like a teacher speaking to restless schoolchildren. "This settlement is in security lockdown. Until the military action is resolved, there is no movement between levels except by official personnel." "Whose side are you on?" someone shouted. "Are you Martians? Whose side are you on?" "In the meantime," the soldier went on, ignoring the question, "we're going to ask you all to be patient. As soon as it's safe to travel, the tube system will be opened. Until that time, we're going to ask you to remain calm for your own safety." Prax didn't know he was going to speak until he heard his own voice. He sounded whiny. My daughter's in the 8th level. Her school's down there. Every level is in lockdown, sir, the soldier said. She'll be just fine. You just have to be patient. The dark-skinned woman from the transportation board crossed her arms. Prax saw two men abandon the press, walking back down the narrow, dirty hall, talking to each other. In the old tunnels this far up, the air smelled of recyclers, plastic and heat and artificial scents, and now also of fear. Ladies and gentlemen, the soldier shouted, for your own safety, you need to remain calm and stay where you are until the military situation has been resolved. What exactly is the military situation? A woman at Prax's elbow said, her voice making the words a demand. It's rapidly evolving, the soldier said. Prax thought there was a dangerous buzz in her voice. She was as scared as anyone. Only she had a gun. So this wasn't going to work. He had to find something else. His one remaining glycine kinon still in his hand, Prax walked away from the tube station. He'd been 8 years old when his father had transferred from the high population centers of Europa to help build a research lab on Ganymede. The construction had taken 10 years, during which Prax had gone through a rocky adolescence. When his parents had packed up to move the family to a new contract on an asteroid in eccentric orbit near Neptune, Prax had stayed behind. He'd gotten a botany internship, thinking that he could use it to grow illicit, untaxed marijuana, only to discover that every third botany intern had come in with the same plan. The 4 years he'd spent trying to find a forgotten closet or an abandoned tunnel that wasn't already occupied by an illegal hydroponics experiment left him with a good sense of the tunnel architecture. He walked through the old, narrow hallways of the first-generation construction. Men and women sat along the walls or in the bars and restaurants, their faces blank or angry or frightened. The display screens were set on old entertainment loops of music or theater or abstract art instead of the usual news feeds. No hand terminals chimed with incoming messages. By the central air ducts, he found what he'd been looking for. The maintenance transport always had a few old electric scooters lying around. No one used them anymore. Because Prax was a senior researcher, his hand terminal would let him through the rusting chain-link fence. He found one scooter with a sidecar and half a charge still in the batteries. It had been 7 years since he'd been on a scooter. He put the glycine kinon in the sidecar, ran through the diagnostic sequence, and wheeled himself out to the hall. The first three ramps had soldiers just like the ones he'd seen at the tube station. Prax didn't bother stopping. At the fourth, a supply tunnel that led from the surface warehouses down toward the reactors, there was nobody. He paused, the scooter silent beneath him. There was a bright acid smell in the air that he couldn't quite place. Slowly, other details registered. The scorch marks at the wall panel. A smear of something dark along the floor. He heard a distant popping sound that it took 3 or 4 long breaths to recognize as gunfire. Rapidly evolving apparently meant fighting in the tunnels. The image of May's classroom, stippled with bullet holes and soaked in children's blood, popped into his mind, as vivid as something he was remembering instead of imagining. The panic he'd felt in the dome came down on him again, but 100 times worse. She's fine, he told the plant beside him. They wouldn't have a firefight in a daycare. They're kids there. The green-black leaves were already starting to wilt. They wouldn't have a war around children, or food supplies, or fragile agricultural domes. His hands were trembling again, but not so badly he couldn't steer. The first explosion came just as he was heading down the ramp from 7 to level 8 along the side of one of the cathedral-huge unfinished caverns where the raw ice of the moon had been left to weep and refreeze, something between a massive green space and a work of art. There was a flash, then a concussion, and the scooter was fishtailing. The wall loomed up fast, and Prax wrenched his leg out of the way before the impact. Above him, he heard voices shouting. Combat troops would be in armor, talking through their radios. At least, he thought they would. The people screaming up there had to be just people. A second explosion gouged the cavern wall. A section of blue-white ice the size of a tractor calving off the roof and falling slowly and inexorably down to the floor, grinding into it. Prax scrambled to keep the scooter upright. His heart felt like it was trying to break out of his ribcage. On the upper edge of the curving ramp, he saw figures in armor. He didn't know if they were UN or Mars. One of them turned toward him, lifting a rifle. Prax gunned the scooter, sliding fast down the ramp. The chatter of automatic weapons and the smell of smoke and steam melt followed him. The school's doors were closed. He didn't know if that was ominous or hopeful. He brought the wobbling scooter to a halt, jumped off. His legs felt weak and unsteady. He meant to knock gently on the steel drop door, but his first try split the skin over his knuckle. "Open up! My daughter's in there!" He sounded like a madman. But someone inside heard him or saw him on the security monitor. The articulated steel plates of the door shuddered and began to rise. Prax dropped to the ground and scrambled through. He hadn't met the new teacher, Miss Carey, more than a few times when dropping May off or picking her up. She couldn't have been more than 20 years old and was belter tall and thin. He didn't remember her face being so gray. The schoolroom was intact, though. The children were in a circle, singing a song about an ant traveling through the solar system with rhymes for all the major asteroid bodies. There was no blood, no bullet holes, but the smell of burning plastic was seeping through the vents. He had to get May someplace safe. He wasn't sure where that would be. He looked at the circle of children, trying to pick out her face, her hair. "May's not here, sir," Miss Carey said, her voice tight and breathy at the same time. "Her mother got her this morning." "This morning?" Prax said, but his mind fastened on her mother. What was Nicola doing on Ganymede? He'd had a message from her 2 days earlier about the child support judgment. She couldn't have gotten from Ceres to Ganymede in 2 days. "Just after snack," the teacher said.
"You mean she was evacuated? Someone came and evacuated May?"
Another explosion came, shaking the ice. One of the children made a high, frightened sound. The teacher looked from him to the child, then back. When she spoke again, her voice was lower. "Her mother came just after snack. She took May with her. She hasn't been here all day." Prax pulled up his hand terminal. The connection was still dead, but his wallpaper was a picture from May's first birthday, back when things were still good, lifetimes ago. He held up the picture and pointed at Nicola, laughing and dangling the doughy, delighted bundle that had been May.
"Her?" Prax said. "She was here?"
The confusion in the teacher's face answered him. There'd been a mistake. Someone, a new nanny or a social worker or something, had come to pick up a kid and gotten the wrong one. "She was on the computer," the teacher said. "She was in the system. It showed her." The lights flickered. The smell of smoke was getting stronger, and the air recyclers were humming loudly, popping and crackling as they struggled to suck out the volatile particulates. A boy whose name Prax should have known whimpered, and the teacher reflexively tried to turn toward him. Prax took her elbow and wrenched her back.
"No, you made a mistake," he said. "Who did you give May to?"
"The system said it was her mother. She had identification. It cleared her." A stutter of muted gunfire came from the hallway. Someone was screaming outside.
and then the kids started to shriek. The teacher pulled her arm away. Something banged against the drop door. She was about 30, dark hair, dark eyes. She had a doctor with her. She was in the system, and May didn't make any kind of fuss about it.
"Did they take her medicine?" he asked. "Did they take her medicine?"
"No, I don't know, I don't think so."
Without meaning to, Prax shook the woman. Only once, but hard. If May didn't have her medicine, she'd already missed her midday dose. She might make it as long as morning before her immune system started shutting down.
"Show me," Prax said. "Show me the picture. The woman who took her."
"I can't. The system's down," the teacher shouted. "They're killing people in the hallway."
The circle of children dissolved, screams riding on the backs of screams. The teacher was crying, her hands pressed to her face. Her skin had an almost blue cast to it. He could feel the raw animal panic leaping through his brain. The calm that fell on him didn't take away from it.
"Is there an evacuation tunnel?" he asked.
"They told us to stay here," the teacher said.
"I'm telling you to evacuate," Prax said. But what he thought was, "I have to find May."